Hello and welcome to the Technically Legal Special Podcast for the Bilski Opinion. I'll be your host today. My name is Ben Snickhoff, and with me we've got
Dominic Rabier
and David O'Brien.
This has got to be the most hotly anticipated Supreme Court opinion in the tech area this year. It was really one of only a couple Supreme Court opinions that dealt with technology and the law, and we waited a very long time for this. The case was originally argued November 9th, 2009, and it wasn't decided until Monday, June 28th, 2010, and it was the longest outstanding case for the court this term. And it was the longest outstanding patent case in a long time. And part of the reason why I'm filling in with all of this trivia is because in the end, at least I personally felt like the case was a bit of a letdown. Dominic, David, what are
your
initial
thoughts? I agree with
that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, to me, I was hoping for some sort of decision that would resolve the whole controversy, and effectively the Supreme Court basically passes the ball back to the Federal Circuit and says, you guys didn't decide, your jurisprudence over the last 25 years hasn't been that great, go back to the drawing board.
This was certainly not the epic case that a lot of people predicted or at least anticipated that it would be, and I think for that reason I felt pretty let down myself. And maybe what's even worse is that I felt like there is just a general lack of clarity in the opinion overall, and it's not really clear what this has done to at least some parts of the state of patentability for processes and methods.
So, Dominic, you started to tell us what the opinion said. Could you just go into a little more detail? What was the claimed patent, and then what did the Supreme Court – how did the Supreme Court actually rule in deciding whether or not it was patentable?
That almost seems peripheral to the big issue of the case, but because everyone was anticipating just much more than that. But basically, the patent dealt with a commodities trading risk hedging method. This guy had filed a patent. This guy, Bilski, had filed a patent on a way of trading commodities so as to hedge your risk, and it was a method. It didn't involve any sort of technology. It didn't involve anything tangible in the real world. It was just follow these steps and you'll hedge your risk. And the Federal Circuit had found that that wasn't enough, and the Supreme Court affirmed that, saying that basically this patent was not patent worthy, although they went a little broader than the Federal Circuit by saying that the machine or transformation test wasn't the only determination of whether something would fall under what's called Section 101 patent eligibility.
Right, and the other thing that I wanted to mention is that the reason the Supreme Court eventually found that this wasn't patentable is because it was an abstract idea, which falls into one of a few exceptions to the patentability, one of the few outright exceptions to patentability, which are laws of nature, scientific formulas, abstract ideas, and is there one more that I'm forgetting?
Well, natural phenomena would be the...
Yeah, natural phenomena or physical phenomena would be the last one.
Okay, yeah... I think one of the main things here, so a lot of people were predicting based on what justices had written other cases from this sitting. So I guess to explain that briefly, the tradition is that for every month that the Supreme Court's in session, each justice writes one case that they heard that month. So they typically hear 9 cases over the course of a month, and each justice will be assigned one of those cases to write. And basically what they do is sit down, figure out how the case is going to come out, and find one justice who fits into the majority in each of those cases and hand them out. So people had speculated that Justice Stevens was going to write the opinion in this case, and Justice Stevens ended up writing a concurrence that was about twice as long as the actual opinion. So what a lot of people are thinking is that Stevens was originally assigned this opinion. He wrote a concurrence that not everyone on the court agreed with, and then Justice Kennedy came in and wrote a very, very exceedingly narrow majority opinion that basically says, as Dominic pointed out, you guys got it wrong. Federal Circuit, you're construing this test too narrowly. Go back and reconsider how you're going to deal with these in the future, but this patent still isn't patentable, so we're going to move along on that issue. So I think if there's anything to be taken from this, it's what Justice Stevens said in his concurrence. Agreement generally there?
Like, it's pretty noticeable that it was just a concurrence in that Justice Stevens went a little further than the majority opinion in that he almost basically frowned upon business method patents entirely, where the Kennedy majority opinion, such that it is, doesn't seem to do that.
Right. That's what I was saying. What's interesting about this opinion from, I guess, at this point, purely an academic standpoint, is how far Justice Stevens went in his concurrence to kind of outline the history of patent law and say that as far as we're, as far as the history of patent law is concerned, business methods were never really subject to patent. And that should inform our current view of this. You know, Justice Kennedy kind of retorts that just because patent law didn't anticipate business patents in the, 1850s doesn't mean that patent law today shouldn't anticipate that. Another thing that I want to point out is that, and I meant to go back and listen to Podcast 25 to see what our predictions were for Bilski, and I didn't have an opportunity to do that, but this case does mimic, in a lot of ways, KSR v. Teleflex, which was another patent case from a couple of years back. In that case, the Supreme Court was reviewing the Federal Circuit's test for obviousness and came to, in two very different issues, a very similar conclusion as they did in this case, that the Federal Circuit was taking a view that was too narrow of how to, instead of having one clear test that was easily applicable across the field, the Supreme Court says, in KSR, you have to have more than one test, and you have to consider more factors than just the four you enunciate. Here, the Supreme Court's saying something very similar in that the Federal Circuit is taking a too narrow view. They're, wanted to just apply one test when they really need to consider more views. Dominic, did you pick up on that too? Do you see any other similarities between those cases?
I remember my prediction back in Podcast 25. That's actually what I was thinking of as you asked your question. And I remember predicting a very narrow ruling that would basically say that this can't be patented, but decline to make any large sort of presumption or changes to the law.
Yeah, if I recall, my prediction was that it was going to be held invalid, but the Supreme Court, and I really should have checked this because if I'm wrong, I'm going to sound like an idiot. I'm pretty sure I said that the Supreme Court was going to tell the Federal Circuit that their test was too narrow. I should really go back and listen to that and post an apology if I'm wrong, though.
I certainly don't really remember exactly what I predicted, but I do recall feeling back then that it would be really unlikely for the Supreme Court to have a sweeping ruling that would basically invalidate an entire class of patents. And within that class, you might have, of course, software patents that could fall within it, since they're so close to, they basically are process patents. So I remember thinking that probably wasn't going to happen.
What else do we have to talk about here?
Well, what exactly is left, then, of the tests, if you want to call them tests, for patentable processes?
I don't think there's any real guidance. So the Supreme Court said, as far as, what tests you can do to determine whether or not this is a patentable process, that you can continue to use the machine and transformation, but you can't just use that. So, that's one test that you can use to determine whether or not it's a patentable process, and you can continue to exclude things on the basis that it's a natural phenomenon or it's a mathematical formula or that it's an abstract idea. But other than that, I didn't see any real guidance in the majority opinion.
Right. I really felt like this. I mean, obviously this case was a throwback to prior precedent, basically. And right in the beginning of the majority opinion, Kennedy comes out and says, look, we have these three classic limitations. These limitations have basically been recognized for at least 100 or 150 years, and those are the only limitations that we're going to read into the Patent Act beyond the statutory language itself. And the rest of the opinion basically focused on a very textual reading of the statutory language and left it at that. So now it's sort of curious, because this is a real problem. The whole reason, or at least one of the main reasons, that the Circuit Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit came out with the Bilski opinion is because they had all these problems with people filing business method patents. And they were able to sort of shoehorn into the old state treat opinion, which only required a useful and concrete and tangible result in order to pass this sort of threshold test for patentability in order to get a patent for a process. And that was ultimately determined to be too weak, obviously, by the Bilski court when it was on appeal. And so they came out with this new opinion that says machine or transformation test is the way to go. And now this gets thrown back down again, and you've got these two basically different doctrines that you have to throw out patents when you're a patent examiner. But there's no real clear guidance here anymore, and I think there's a real mess, and it's not really clear what's going to happen in the future or what the Federal Circuit's going to do for that matter.
Right. Specifically as it relates to software patents, I don't think there's any question that software itself is not automatically excluded as a subject matter at this point in time.
Yeah, 100% correct. If nothing else, I think that this opinion strengthened the position for people who are filing software patents.
You know, that being said, it would be possible to write a patent for a piece of software that was written so poorly, or that was, you know, such an abstract idea, or did in fact just encode a natural phenomenon, that it wouldn't be patentable. But I think there's definitely a presumption of patentability going forward. And I don't mean that as a legal presumption. I mean that as, you know, people are going to assume that software is patentable going forward.
Right, and you know, of course you have to also satisfy the other threshold tests that are in Section 101 and then all the other sections, 103 and 112 as well, in order to get a patent.
Right, Dominic, it looked like you were going to chime in and say something a second ago.
Yeah, I was going to say the only safe prediction that I can make at this point is we're going to see more litigation on this issue in the future, and this is not the last patent case on this issue that I think will come before the Supreme Court. I expect a follow-up case of a slightly different variety to come before the court, say, within the next 5 years to clarify some of these issues, because looking at this from perhaps a patent office perspective, like, what's an examiner going to make from this? How are they going to change how they prosecute patents? At the patent office, it's unclear really how this case will fundamentally change things on the ground or provide guidance for the patent office. And what's most likely is going to happen is the office will just choose a direction and be like, all right, we're going to go this way. And then someone's not going to like it. They're going to appeal. They're going to get through the Board of Appeals. And then they're going to get back to the Federal Circuit. And they're going to make a ruling. And that's going to go to the Supreme Court. So
I think that's 100% correct. And not only that, I think that the Supreme Court's pretty much stating here that it's unwilling to resolve these issues. And if you look at some of the first couple of pages in Kennedy's majority opinion, he makes it very clear that they're just not going to read limitations into the Patent Act that aren't expressly there already. And because of that, I think what he's saying here is this is a legislative problem. Go take this to Congress and have them fix it. We basically don't want to have to fix it for you.
Yeah, I think in the wake of the State Street decision that sort of opened the floodgates for the business method patents, one category of patent that you saw a lot of was tax process patents. Basically, people would say, hey, here's a great new way to make your taxes. Guess what? We're patenting it! And a lot of people within the industry didn't like this sort of patent. They thought it wasn't something that should be patentable. And this decision doesn't say that sort of thing can't be patented, and it sort of tosses the ball back to Congress and says, if you don't want this sort of thing to be patentable, pass legislation that says as much.
That's true, and you know, you still have those three principles to fall back on, probably the biggest of which applies to business methods, is the abstract principles, or the prohibition on abstract principles, because I think you can fit a lot of questionable patents out there, or questionable applications for patents, into this sort of idea that, you know what you're really trying to do here is more of an abstract principle. And maybe because of that, you don't need a articulated test such as the machine or transformation test to do that. But I don't know. Like, you have to think, though, that the real problem is falling on the shoulders of the patent examiners at the USPTO. It's falling as hardly on the district courts and, of course, the Federal Circuit. It definitely has, it's a problem that the USPTO has to address.
I remember skimming through a first memorandum that went around to staff at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Basically, it was, you know, the Patent and Trademark Office first memorandum about Bilski, and from what I remember about it, it basically said, machine or transformation isn't the only test. We'll get you more when we understand what's going on, which, I mean, There's an old saying that you never know what a Supreme Court case means until the next Supreme Court case comes out, because to some degree you really don't know. You know, this draws a new line in the sand, but you don't really know where that line is until a line gets drawn on either side of that, you know, kind of giving you a reference point.
Perhaps one another interesting point that we could talk about just a tiny bit is the fact that this was issued on Justice Stevens' second to last day, and we have a new nominee potentially, Elena Kagan, who might be coming in. So this was a closely pitted opinion, at least in terms of whether or not there should be a ruling that categorically prohibits business method patents. Do you guys have any sense that this might change if the court was composed of different individuals, like it might be during the next term?
So there were five votes for, I'm sorry, four votes for Stevens' concurrence. It was Stevens, Breyer, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor. If you take out Stevens and add Kagan, even if she agrees with Stevens, that's still not a fifth vote for limiting business patents. But it's very possible that, given a year and a case that addresses this a little more squarely, I think it would be possible that there's, you know, some room for movement in this court. You know, a big problem with this case is that it was really a bad patent. I don't think, in fact, there was no one on the court who thought that this was patentable. But, you know, it was so clearly unpatentable that it doesn't really present a fringe issue for the court to address something as important as software patents. You know, maybe a software patent case will come by and the court will be able to develop it a little more and really get an understanding for it. But I think it would have been tough for the court to basically close the door on software patents on a case that has absolutely nothing to do with software.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not just software. I mean, this could have affected a lot of other types of patents out there, and one another of which was specifically mentioned was biomedical and genetic diagnostic patents, which are often patented with claims that lay claims to patentable processes for diagnosis for the diagnosis of certain diseases and sometimes the treatment of them too. Often those are classified as very suspect patents in terms of whether or not they should be held invalid as patentable processes as well.
One interesting thing that I find about this is Justice Sotomayor, who really she didn't write any opinions in this case, but she did take a part in deciding it. I am pretty sure she is the ex-wife of Kevin Noonan, who's a big patent scholar and has a blog that covered this. I doubt he was consulted in any way in the opinion, but it's a neat little tie to the blogging community here.
On the whole, I think the ruling is kind of exemplary of the Roberts Court in terms of being very limited in scope, being careful not to go too far, and putting a lot of putting the onus basically back on the legislature and saying, Congress, if you want something done in this area, you're going to have to do it yourself. So.
You know, I think you're absolutely right again, but I don't think that that's always a bad thing. But you have to worry about when the legislative process is used to sort of correct these problems. I wonder if they're going to be influenced by the lobbying groups, the large corporations, or you know, whatever interests might be out there that would like to see more robust protection for business methods and the like. One hopes, at least, I guess, that the judicial process is somewhat more objective than the legislative process, but who knows? So, did you guys find anything else interesting about the opinion?
No, I mean, I think I led into it by saying that this opinion was a bit of a letdown in how little it actually addressed, given how long we waited for it. And at least we've covered everything that I can think of, unless anyone else has any probing insights.
I'm all set here. I mean, I agree that I was hoping for something that provided a little more clarity, as opposed to just tossing the ball back to the Federal Circuit and saying, your last 22 years of jurisprudence, basically, this opinion, like, they cite Supreme Court precedent and say, this is the law, and then says, what you guys have made out of this isn't the law. Go back and think about it again. And they very much tossed the ball back to the Federal Circuit, which is kind of odd considering that the Bilski opinion on the Federal Circuit was very measured in saying we can't decide some of this stuff. The Supreme Court's going to have to look at this. So it seems like neither court really wants to decide these issues.
Yeah, Supreme Court really tossed this back to some precedents that were out there prior to the creation of the Federal Circuit even.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder if the Supreme Court is not pleased with the results coming out of the Federal Circuit. Because with other cases, you know, what decides whether or not they take them is when there's a split in circuits, and when they've basically got two or more options to choose from on a given issue. When something comes from the Federal Circuit, they've only got one, you know, they've got one opinion below, or maybe a series of opinions below that are trending the wrong way or trending a way that they need to clarify. It's the very opposite. It's very different when it's coming from a different Federal Circuit, one of the numbered Federal Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah, I mean, that's another good point. I mean, another thing that sort of irks me sometimes about at least some of the more recent opinions that came out of the Federal Circuit is that they seem to go back on themselves a lot. They seem to create these new tests for things. And wait, no, that wasn't quite right. Sorry, we screwed this up. Let's call this one the machine or transformation test, and let's see if this one sticks to the wall. And, you know, it's like they're always trying to fix these problems, which, I don't know. To me, some of the problems are so pervasive that they need to be addressed more thoroughly than through murky doctrine that is not always very clear. I mean, after Bilski at the appeal level through the Federal Circuit, they, you know, a lot of patent applicants then modified the way that they would prosecute their inventions and tried to make them fit into these metrics that the Federal Circuit created. And, you know, those things have a real effect on the way that people go about conducting business. How they go about deciding whether or not they're going to file a patent. And, you know, the statutory limitations on filing and how long you get patent protection for after you've invented something, I mean, those things do have a real effect at some point. And now it just seems like a lot of this is up in the air. So I guess I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, I'd like to add that a lot of the problems you see with them backtracking and changing previous opinions is just something that comes out of having a court with many justices on it. You see this out of the Ninth Circuit a lot, too, where they'll issue one opinion and then a few months later they'll issue an inconsistent opinion, and then, you know, eventually they'll decide to do an in-bank rehearing and finally get a consensus even within that circuit as to how a certain line of cases should be decided. It's kind of an inevitable result of not having the same three or nine justices deciding every single case.
It'll be really interesting to see whether we'll see any movement towards patent reform being passed through Congress after this case, basically. Because I agree with you, Dave, that we kind of need some sort of clarity, and I don't think it's the sort of clarity that the courts can provide. But at the same time, I don't have the greatest confidence that Congress will get it right either. So.
Okay, so any concluding thoughts, Dominic?
All set.
David O'Brien.
No, sir.
Okay, in that case, I would like to thank you all for tuning in and listening to this Bilski special edition of the Technically Legal Podcast. You can always contact us, email us at podcast@technicallylegal.org or visit our website, technicallylegal.org, or follow us on Twitter @TechLegal. And thank you for listening.